The Holy Gospel according to Matthew, the 16th chapter.
Glory to you, O Lord.
From that time on, Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and undergo great suffering at the hands of the elders and chief priests and scribes, and be killed, and on the third day be raised. And Peter took Jesus aside and began to rebuke him, saying, God forbid it, Lord, that this must never happen to you. But he turned and said to Peter, Get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me, for you are setting your mind not on divine things, but on human things. Then Jesus told disciples, If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake will find it. For what will it profit them if they gain the whole world but forfeit their life? Or what will they give in return for their life? For the Son of Man is to come with angels in the glory of his Father, and then he will repay everyone for what has been done. Truly I tell you, there are some standing here who will not taste death before they see the Son of Man coming in his dominion. The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, O Christ.
Please be seated. Well, when Abby and I were living in the Bay Area, we decided one night to go see a play that we had heard a lot about. And the play was called The Wild Bride, which was playing at the Berkeley Rep Theater in downtown Berkeley. And the play, you know, it was a really an amazing play. It was an imaginative, modern fairy tale based, kind of loosely set and cast in Depression-era Appalachia. And the story follows a father who's standing on the precipice of financial and personal ruin, probably from the Great Depression. He makes a deal with Satan. And Satan, who I remember was dressed in this very sport kind of black pinstripe suit and played the banjo throughout the theater piece. And this father is tricked into giving away his daughter so that he can be saved from financial hardship. And so then the story twists and turns, following the daughter and her eventual breaking free of the bonds of this deal with Satan. And it's an incredible piece of theater which has been on my mind this past week as I have been kind of wrestling with this gospel story. For what will it profit a person if they gain the whole world but forfeit their life? Or what will it give in return? What will they give in return for their life? This was perhaps the most fascinating part of the Wild Bride play for me, because it was an exploration, I think, of this very question. A man so scared for himself that he ultimately ends up giving even his own daughter away in order to save his own skin. Self-preservation, I think, is what it's called. Or as Abby says to me, looking out for number one, as she makes fun of me when I get super cranky and make myself a meal without leaving her much of anything. It's something that I think all of us can relate to. Self-preservation. It's, you know, what fascinated Charles Darwin when he was watching animals with his travels on the Beagle. And it's what makes up a part of our complex web of human traits. In fact, Darwin defended this in saying that in some extreme cases, this self-preservation is what saves a lot of species, what when we as human beings even get into difficult situations, sometimes this trait is the only thing that keeps us alive. And so here comes, I think, the complexity of interpreting this text. For when Jesus says, "If anyone want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me." So what does Jesus mean here? Does it mean that we need to do this maybe completely? We need to tamp down that self-preservation, maybe even physically, like in the third century with the desert fathers and those who, in fact, beat themselves because they needed to deny themselves this physical type of pleasure? Or is Jesus talking about maybe as the prosperity gospel preachers talk about, well, this is just a symbolic spiritual description of our faith life and really should have no impact in how we should live in the 21st century? Or is it something in between? So let me offer some of my own thoughts on this text, though let me be clear, I don't have this text fully figured out by a long shot. You know, one of the special parts, I think, of this statement that Jesus says, and I want to point us to first, is the statement of denying ourselves and taking up their cross. And what one of the things that actually Pastor Gene and all of us pastors that get together for text study every Tuesday, and what she pointed out is that this is a uniquely Christian statement. It's a challenging statement, and we'll get to that in a bit, but it's a special statement for Christians. You know, other religious traditions might say similar things of detachment, maybe, or resisting evil, but this imagery, taking up one's cross, is almost exclusively found in our tradition. Like many of Jesus' statements, it's full of oxymorons and symbols. In fact, it's just kind of weird. Many of you know that the cross symbolized this, it was an instrument of torture, of death, right? So how many of you today have heard anybody say, well, take up your electric chair? Or take up your lethal injection table and follow me, right? It's just plain weird. But it's also special. So we need to think about this as we read it. It's unique to our tradition. And when we read something like this, Jesus is obviously saying this in a very forceful way. And so he's saying it in kind of this statement of resistance to Peter. So what resistance? Resistance to what? Well, the first thought that I want to explore with you today is this thought that I had of balance. Balance. And if you look at what is one of the most important values of Judaism, ancient Judaism as well as Judaism today, it's balance. It's this idea of creation in balance. In fact, I have these conversations with Lori Franklin, who is the rabbinic leader at Har Shalom in Missoula, and she gets quite worked up about Genesis 1. She's like, you know, God didn't say that creation was good just because of Adam and Eve and some lovely animals, right? Her whole argument is that God sees creation as good because it's in balance. And where she gets so worked up is when we get stuck on that dominion language, which we're all kind of are familiar with, right? Where God gives dominion to humankind over the earth. And Lori is just like, that does not mean that humankind has the power to bend nature to its will, kind of thing. What she emphatically says is what that means is the calling to us to what? Keep creation in balance. That is God's task for us in Genesis 1. And that, I think, is what we can see in Jesus' words in our story today, in light of balance. You know, the act of self-preservation is a God-given trait which serves a purpose. But when this trait gets out of balance with other God-given emotions and becomes the only trait that really matters in life, it becomes dangerous. It creates greed, consumerism at all costs, corruption, hunger for power, and severe injustice, all of which are sinful and evil. And Jesus, in his time, saw this imbalance lived out in the abuses and authoritarianism of the Roman Empire. And this radical and in many ways evil imbalance is what Jesus had absolutely no problem, we know, calling out and taking to task. And is also, I think, what he is inviting his followers to participate in as well. So thus, to get into, take up your cross and deny yourself and follow me. You know, this is a statement that has traditionally been about the embrace, right? The sponge. It's a common for this text to be interpreted as, well, we need to take up suffering. We need to deal with it. We need to embrace it, which is a recipe for a beast, by the way. But in light of balance, a world in balance, I don't think that to take up suffering is what Jesus is talking about at all. I think what Jesus is saying here is absolutely the opposite, is to resist suffering. Take up your cross is to recognize, to name, to resist the reality of evil and imbalance in our time, including maybe that in our own imbalance of self-preservation in us. And this, I think, is a deep Christian calling to bear witness, not to absorb abuse. This, I think, is what the clergy in Charlottesville stood upon when they were gathered arm in arm and stood face to face with those protesters, some of which were carrying guns, but still would not allow them to go pick a fight with each other. This is what I think gets Christians to stand with the native tribes at Standing Rock, or stand with women seeking equal rights, or to stand with all of those seeking equal treatment under the law, to take up one's cross. And that's, I think, finally, one more challenge to us, not only in society, but for us, ourselves. Jesus demonstrates in his words to Peter, you know, sometimes our own beings want to ignore the evil in the world. I'm definitely guilty of that. You know, we just want to wall ourselves off. We want to forget about it. And maybe even we want to make deals that insulate us from evil at the expense of others. Again, our self-preservation, if unchecked, can cause us to not have a clear sense of reality. It blinds us, actually, to the haves and the have-nots. And so I think what Jesus is telling Peter, finally, denying himself means denying the urge to only think about ourselves. To only think about the disciples and their maybe leadership of this great rebellion that Jesus was going to do with Rome. I think He's calling us all to be introspective of ourself and that self-preservation. I've been working with Peter Metcalf, our church president, to assemble a committee called the Building Audit Committee. And this committee's job will be to take stock of how we are using our church facilities and make some possible recommendations to our church council and to our congregation at our annual meeting on maybe, you know, there are some new ways that we can use our building as a ministry. Now, some of you may be thinking, well, what does our church building have to do with denying ourselves and self-preservation? Well, actually, I think there's a lot that it has to do and connect with. I think it can be common for churches sometimes maybe to hide behind their buildings in the name of self-preservation. I remember as a kid in my home congregation, there was this one room that was off the library that some so-and-so built the books to. And because of that, well, we can't allow anybody in this room. And so what actually happened is that nobody uses the room. In fact, it was locked a lot of the time. But the bookshelves were amazing. Right? And I think that, you know, that can happen with us, maybe if we don't even realize it. You know, our basement down below has over 2,000 square feet that is used when? Maybe a couple Sunday school kids go down there, but is empty most of the week. What ministry could we start in that space? What partner could we have possibly to rent out or to use the basement as something else that could have an impact on this community? This is, I think, the denying ourselves part that I want to enter in and the conversations that I want to have with all of you in this next year. This is a new way in which maybe we can resist that self-preservation taking over completely in our community. May God grant us courage. Courage to pick up our cross and to bring balance to our community and to our world. Amen.